Solomon Kugel, the hero of Sholem Auslander's debut novel, likes to worry, and he has plenty to worry about. Solomon has just moved with his wife and young son to a farmhouse in a small town in upstate New York that he can't quite afford. His elderly mother, who falsely believes herself to be a Holocaust survivor, has moved in with them. And then he discovers a foul-smelling, decrepit old woman who claims to be Anne Frank living in the attic. And despite its title, Hope, Tragedy, the book is very funny. It's published by Riverhead, and I'm pleased that it brings Sholem Auslander, who is also a public radio favorite because of his many appearances on This American Life, back to our show today. Hello.
Hello. Thank you.
As I said, much of this book is laugh-out-loud funny. Would it be accurate to call it a black comedy?
I hope so.
That's what you'd like. Well, you give a clue with the cover, or at least the publisher has, beyond the image of, it looks like, Bambi. All of the words are crossed out.
Yeah, that actually came from a mistake. I think they'd sent over artwork, and I wasn't supposed to be looking at the type, and I just thought that it looked pretty good. I liked something about a self-negating title.
So Hope of Tragedy is crossed out.
Yeah.
Not many writers have been brave enough to poke fun at, well, I won't say you don't poke fun at the Holocaust, but at things that are connected to the Holocaust. Were you concerned that your treatment of it might upset some readers?
Not particularly. For me, you know, the third rail is the place I like to go anyway. But if it's poking fun at anything, it's poking fun at humanity, at the fact that this happens over and over again, and we have very little options but to pretend it won't.
Well, the reviews have gotten it. Congratulations on the fabulous review Janet Masson gave you in today's New York Times. She called the book staggeringly nervy. Did your publisher have any qualms?
No, you know what? I'm very, very fortunate in that regard. He's the same publisher who published Foreskin's Lament and published Beware of God before that. And I think, actually, if I go to him with something that doesn't have Anne Frank in the attic, he sends it back.
But there is this thin line that you have to walk here between something that's very funny and something that can be in an unspeakably bad taste.
Well, sure. And I think that comes down to the point, to the purpose. If the point is to belittle some horrors, then obviously that's awful. But I think the point here is to ask a very real question. What do we do now? 2012, looking back over all this human history, and it's tends to be bloody. What do I tell my kid?
And the Holocaust has almost been encased in some kind of amber.
Yeah, as a symbol of it. And she and Anne Frank, even more so. She was, you know, as she says in the book, Jesus was a Jew, but I'm the Jewish Jesus.
It's been 5 years since you were here to talk about your memoir, Foreskin's Lament, about breaking with your Orthodox Jewish upbringing. Did it take you all that time to write this book? Or get the tone right?
The tone actually came pretty quickly once I decided it was her. It was hard. I wanted to do something about a character whose flaw was hope, because that made me laugh, because that's me. I'd be happier if I were more hopeless. I wouldn't get hurt quite as much.
And there's a big debate here as to whether Solomon is a pessimist or an optimist. His shrink tries to convince him he's an optimist.
Right.
Although he's a bit paranoid.
He's a paranoid optimist. And he's worried that something bad will happen to ruin all the good stuff he's expecting. And so I didn't spend all the time writing this one book, but there were three or four versions of it that were awful, and all the things that you were just mentioning about the wrong way to do it beforehand.
Was Anne Frank there from the start? It's interesting that she was born in 1929, so she could conceivably be alive today. She'd be 82 years old.
Yeah, I was very lucky. No, what was there in the beginning was him and a farmhouse and his mother. And it was this family that where the mother was always expecting genocide to come. So in the very beginning of every draft, this guy hears some noises in his attic, goes upstairs, finds his mother, and she's there because she's sure genocide is coming.
And you move from one attic to another here.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's what Anne Frank's journey is. But part of that came from something that just seemed very likely, that a little girl, having gotten out of the horrors of that, might look back at her time in her attic, the last time she knew with her family, as the best time of her life.
Solomon learns that the previous owners of the farmhouse, who were of German ancestry, had kept Anne hidden for 30 or 40 years out of guilt. And although Solomon would love to evict her, doesn't his own guilt and his fear of a public backlash against him prevent him from doing so?
Yeah, and they couldn't throw her out because they were saying, well, a German can't throw Anne Frank out. How's that going to look? A Jew can do it. And he's like, what are you talking about? A Jew can't throw out Anne Frank. The reality is no one can throw out Anne Frank, and that's why she's up there.
He imagines a newspaper headline, Jew drops dime on Holocaust survivor.
Yeah, and his mother very, you know, reacting, you know, why didn't you just call Dr. Mengele?
Why hasn't Anne Frank revealed herself as still being alive?
Well, part of the reason is because is why she's up there in the first place. It's safe. She likes the safety of it, the darkness of it, the being alone of it. The bigger part is that she's working on her second book, and it's been about 60 years, and it's not really where she likes it. And until she's convinced she can sell more than the first book, which she reminds everyone throughout the book she sold 32 million copies of, she's not coming out. She wants a bestseller.
When Solomon starts to feel overwhelmed, he fantasizes about hiding in an attic himself, but he believes that if he can only get someone to agree to hide him and his family, he can use a credit card, a smartphone, and Amazon.com to keep them alive.
Yeah. It's going to be a very different genocide next time. You're going to have to have a very tight relationship with a UPS guy because he'll know where all the deliveries are going. But if you can get a UPS guy on your side, I think you'll probably be okay.
Well, he asks his work colleagues and neighbors if they'd allow him to live in their attics if there was an emergency. And they're wondering, what kind of emergency are you talking about?
Right, and he's very serious about it. But that's something I've always thought about. And I think lots of people think about that. What would you do in the worst-case scenario?
Now, should we understand that Solomon would be paranoid partly because of the circumstances of his life? His mother believes herself to be a Holocaust survivor. And then he figures out, how old is he when he figures out that his mother was too young to have been interned in a concentration
camp? Right, yeah, he's about 13 or so. The thing with the mother that's actually more tragic than that is that her own life is a wonderful story, as he tries to point out to her. Why would you tell Jonah, his son, about this Holocaust story that's not true, when your own story was one of being left by your husband and raising children by yourself? It's an inspiring story. Why wouldn't you tell that? And her answer is, well, because she hasn't suffered enough. That wasn't suffering. Holocaust was suffering. Sure, I raised a couple of kids, but that's not Auschwitz.
She wakes up screaming every morning. She hides bread between cushions in the couch because she believes that's how Holocaust survivors behave. But Saul has rented a spare room in the farmhouse to a tenant to help pay the mortgage. How does the tenant feel about the screaming and about some of Solomon's mother's unsavory habits?
In a weird way, he's this dark voice of sanity in the book. He's the one, like, with the outside world would react. Yeah, there's a woman in the attic, and she's defecating in the vents, and he was promised space up there. So why should he have to put up with all of this?
Solomon just enables his mother in all of this delusional belief.
And a lot of that comes from hope. I think that he's hopeful that if he could, first of all, he's hopeful that she's going to die, and that doesn't seem to be happening. But he's also hopeful that if he does put up with
his wife would prefer for the mother not to be there.
I think they're both waiting for her to drop dead. But I think he feels like if he's good enough to her, she'll turn. She'll become the mother he always wanted, and that's just never the case.
So he introduces his mother to Anne Frank in the attic in hope that she'll be so unhappy that there's someone in the house more miserable than she is.
She'll throw her out.
Yeah.
Right, and doesn't work out.
That's not what happens.
No, she meets Anne Frank and thinks she's wonderful and becomes sort of the Mipreis of modern times, where she's cleaning up her room and ordering her matzah and getting her all the stuff she needs.
Now, you've been doing other stuff, so I imagine that despite the fact that this went through three drafts and all sorts of changes, it wasn't the only thing you've been doing over the past 5 years.
It's been a pretty steady focus.
This American Life, the short stories,
yeah,
other things.
Yeah, but yeah, anyone can do This American Life in their sleep. It's a joke.
I can. You tell Ira?
Oh, is this live? Now, yeah, well, you know, it's not the kind of story you want to stay immersed in all the time, particularly because the first drafts were heavy. They weren't like this. Once it became fun, and once I just made them meet and have him discover Anne Frank was the first scene I wrote, and after that it was just a lot of fun. And sinning is fun for someone who comes from an Orthodox background.
Well, is that one of the reasons you're living in a place where there isn't a large Jewish population?
Well, that's why I moved there. Then I went over to the first day there. I went over to say hello to the neighbors, and she has a big Mugging David necklace on. So that's God's big joke, is that it's probably 80% Jewish at this point. But I'm in the woods, and the deer are Gayim, and the bears I don't know about. They can go either way.
What are you working on now?
A couple of different things. They're also, you know, kind of like this. They start off kind of bizarre and funny, but then, you know, when you stick with it long enough, like the trial or anything else, that gets darkness and reality become funny.
So you think that Kafka's The Trial is a funny book?
Well, he thought it was a funny book. He cracked up reading it. Flannery Connor couldn't read publicly because she thought her stories were hysterical. I think that's the way most of these things start. If they came back now and found out that they were these serious tomes, they'd be horrified. I remember reading a Beckett thing where he was furious seeing a production of Endgame, I think it was, and because it was so dreary, he said, why would anyone want to sit through that?
Well, I'm sure Shakespeare would be upset by the way we perform some of the comedies.
But they're comedies.
But we're not seeing enough funny comedies in the movies these days. They're all just about one-liners. Are you working on a screenplay?
Well, Foreskin's Lament is hopefully going to go that way. I've got a project I'm working on with Showtime, and I think dark comedy is the only kind of comedy that's worth doing. It's just it's hard to convince everybody else of that.
Well, you've been getting wonderful reviews in another Times review in the Sunday Times. Steve Stern called you a virtuoso humorist and a brave one, and he warned readers that you'll make them laugh until their heart breaks. And I'm assuming that's your ultimate goal.
It is. And Steve's a Jew, so he's going to just say positive things no matter what.
So is he also a friend? Because there are these scandals where friends review friends' books.
He is now.
He's
my best friend now.
Well, Sholem Auslander will be giving a reading and signing books tonight at 7 o'clock at the Barnes & Noble store on 82nd Street and Broadway. And when you meet your readers, what did they tell you? They laughed, or did they tell you, you know, I'm really upset with you for
writing about
these kinds of topics?
So far, so good. I think if you read if you hear about a book like this and you don't read it, you're going to be offended. I think it's very hard to read it and take offense. In the end of it, she comes off as pretty good. And it's obviously written with pain and aware of the subject and trying to find an answer to it. If that offends you, then you probably shouldn't come out to the reading.
Sholem Auslander, who was raised upstate in Muncie, New York, has been nominated for the Current Jewish Book Award for writers under 35. He's been published everywhere. He appears regularly on This American Life, and his latest novel is Hope, a Tragedy, a novel. It's published by Riverhead Books. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you.